Okay, today's class number 2 in a new series, and we talk about our previous series, actually our previous shiur, that's a typo. We began our study of Bereishit chapter 1, and we went over the structure, I'll review it in a minute, and we talk about the obvious parallels between 1, 4, 2, 5, and 3, 6, and the reason we brought that was to prove the Chumash is a book to study, not just read, and I'm trying to teach you, again, how to study the book, and how to find, and what to look for, with the assumption that Chumash is a book to study, not read, and God wants to study the book and derive its meaning through study. And the question that comes up, how do we know any specific interpretation is correct? So that's what the Beit Midrash is about, and that's what our tradition is about, and that's why we learn the classic commentators, and Chumash is so deep, every generation was able to find meaning and apply it, just to make sure that you apply it properly. And you have to search for the wider themes as well as the specific ones to make sure everything's in line. What I want to talk about today is we started last week the theme of creation. After going over the overall theme of Sefer Bereishit, of the first 11 chapters being the background, they focusing on all humankind, but a background to understand why God's choosing a people, where the top main topic of the book is God beginning a nation, which is this week's Parshat Shavua. We just read Parshat Lech Lecha. Or coming up this week, Parshat Lech Lecha. But what I want to focus on today is we're in the middle of our story of creation, and we were talking about the parallels of 1 to 4, 2 to 5, and 3 to 6. We pretty much were focusing at the end of last week's shiur on day 3, and I tried to show you that every day God gives a command and then executes the command and then reflects. We call that P-A-R, par. And every time God says to do something, it happens. Either God himself does it or says it happens. The only time that we found God commanding something to happen and it's done by something else, that was on the second part of day 3 when God tells the earth or the land to make trees for fruits of trees and vegetation, that the land itself does that. And what I suggested last week, that might relate to the underlying problem of idol worship, where people think there's what we call Mother Nature, there must be some power of nature, like a god that's in the ground that causes things to grow, which can lead to idol worship because people need the ground to give its fruit, to be able to eat, to survive. And you can farm your field, but certain things are out of your control. And therefore, if you believe in some nature god or earth god or rain god or many gods, then you turn to them for help as opposed to understanding there's one god behind everything. So that's a quick review of last week. We also talked about, are we studying that created in the creation story, why God created or how he created, or today, as we'll do more in detail today, what might be the meaning of human life and why God makes man. Okay, so just a quick review again. What we did last week, we had the parallel or day and day 4, the sun, the moon, the stars. The Rakia on day 2, dividing between the heaven and the sea. On day 5, God makes the fish and the birds in the heavens. And on day 3, where we ended up last week, God makes the land. And then 2 acts of creation on day 3, we focused on the first one being land itself. The second one was the vegetation or the beginning of life, reproduction, and that big what we call a quantum leap from 3A to 3B, which we're going to focus on later today. Okay, so I'm going to go back to the parallel between day 3 and day 6 based on this will be partially review and partially new. So we talked about day 3 and day 6 being parallel because every day of creation has what we call PAR again, plan, act, reflect. But on day 3 and 6, it happens twice. And on day 3, the jump from 3A to 3B, from the first act of creation to the second one, is a major leap because even though they're connected, they both relate to land. We're going from inanimate objects, basic elements of nature that are created, to life forms, and life forms that reproduce in themselves, give fruit. Basically, it's much more complex, and that's going to set the stage for what's going to happen on day 6. Okay, so now, on the next part of the source sheet, we are going to, I'll show you the parallel. The first thing, I'm going to talk about the yellow. I hope you see all the yellow here. On the yellow, I want to show you what we call par. Every day begins with Vayomer Elohim. Let me get my little marker here. Marker. I think this is the marker. No, that's not it. Maybe this is it. Okay. Not decided either. Oh, here we are. We don't want that. We want this one. That's it. Okay. That's what we wanted. Okay. So we had Vayomer Elohim, beginning day one, day three, and Vayomer Elohim, beginning day six. Okay. On day three, God says, let the water recede and make land. Okay. And here God says, let the land give all, living animals, let them come up from the land. And it had come true. On day three, God gives a name called Yabash Haaretz. On day six, God himself, even though God tells the land to do it, Totzi Haaretz, Nefesh Chaya, Hashem himself does it. And we'll see how that was different than what happens on day three in a minute. Okay. And then there's evaluation, Barachin Ki Tov, both here and here. That was 3a and 6a. Very simple and basic. God makes land animals, plans, acts, and reflects. Nice and simple. On the second part of day three, Elohim tells the land, Tatsheret Esef, Desh Esem Azri Azera, etc. HPO set free. Okay, and it happens. And then we talk about how it happens. Instead of God doing it, the land itself, Atitzi Haaretz Deshe, the land gives up Deshe, Esem Azri Azera, what we call vegetation, and Eitz Pri Yosef Pri, and trees giving fruit. God evaluates and calls it day three. And that's what we talked about last week. Today, we're going to see the parallel to day six. What happens on day six? It's much more complex. What's the command? Elohim says, and we have the strange plural, what people like to call the royal we, Nase Adam betzamenu kidmuteno v'yadu b'gatayam, let's make man in our image. In our likeness, whatever that, how you translate that. And he'll be in charge of everything under the sun, we'll see. Everything from day five, the fish and the fowl and the birds, ovashamayim, and the land animals from 6a. In other words, the sun and the moon, the sun are in charge of the sky, everything above, and man is in charge of everything down below. Then we have a nice structure for the days four, five, and six. We're giving authority over everything God created. And we saw on day four that God gives Memshalah, he gives control of the heavens to the sun and the moon, the sun during the day and the moon at night. And on the end of day six, he gives control of all the animals, all the fish and the fowl from day five and the animals of the first part of day six to man. Now, here again, how does God create? We have the verb Vayivra, which so far was only two times. We had the opening Bereshit bara Elokim as the introduction to the entire chapter, at least for the first 4 days. We had a bara when God makes the fish and the fowl on day five. And now we have one more bara, which is usually understood as something from nothing, on 6b, on the second part of day six. And again, God makes man in his image. What we talked about last week, I think, is what's Elohim been doing up until now? He's been planning, acting, reflecting. And now that's creativity. And man is given the ability to be creative in that way. He's different than the other animals. And we'll talk about that now much more in detail. Then God blesses man and gives him to be fruitful and multiply, very similar to the blessing he gave the fish and the fowl. Okay. And to be in charge. Now, Pesach Chavtet, as we're going to focus on now, move down a little bit. It's something we usually don't pay much attention to. It'll be the focus of today's share. Man receives a diet on day six. Let me stop the screen for a minute. And let me turn off. That's okay. Let me stop the share for a minute and see what people remember. Okay. From what you remember, what is man's diet in on day six? Just from memory, someone real quick.
Vegetables, fruit, grass, trees.
And what can't he eat?
Meat.
Okay, now it doesn't say he can't eat meat, but it's assumed.
It's not mentioned.
It's not mentioned at all. And it is mentioned after the flood, which hopefully we'll get to today. Now, and how is he different than the animals? The animals eat the same thing?
I think the animals eat the grass. That doesn't mention fruit. Is that possible?
We'll see. If you ask most people, they never paid attention to it, even though they read it on Simchas Torah and they read it 2 weeks ago. But there's a very clear difference between what animals eat and what humans eat. And I'm making a big deal about it because one of the key points of Chumash is the difference between man and animal, even though they're so similar. Now, we know from day-to-day life, animals and humans pretty much eat the same. You know, if there's vegetation that humans can eat, animals can eat them. Animals eat fruit. If they can climb up the tree, for sure they can get them. And if the fruit falls from the tree, they can eat them. It's rarely do you find an animal that's not able to eat a fruit, but can eat vegetables.
Maybe grain?
Grain didn't exist yet. Grain that it might have grown, but it wasn't domesticated yet. We'll get to that very soon. But I'm making a big deal about it today because it's going to explain a lot of the things that we do every single day as an observant Jew. We call making brachot. There's a whole category of brachot we make. And that says shakol, but remember Bar Beis and Bar Pi Adama, and there's more brachot we'll see. The goal of today's shiur is pretty much to understand the logic and the meaning behind all the blessings we make when we eat food. And that they might be coming to remind us of one of the underlying themes of creation. Okay, so let's take a look now. Now, anyone else remember what we eat, what animals eat?
They can only eat the Yerek Esev La'ochla. That's from...
Yeah, that's what we're going to read now. But the key word is going to be Yerek Esev. Mm-hmm. So I'll share my screen again now. I just want to make sure people were awake. We don't want that. Wait, we have to share my screen. 1 second. Share screen. We want this. Okay. Let's look at the parallel again. Verse 29, actually, I want to open up I think the Hebrew is simple enough. I think we can use the Hebrew here. Let's use this over. I'll move this over to the right. 1 second. Get my screen straight and move these up to the top. Okay. Now, remember on day three, remember we have 3A and 3B? We're going to go back now to day three. What did God say? On day three, God made, he says, Tasher, Desh, Esa, Mazir, Esa, Piri. And what happens? The land takes out Deshe. Got it? Esa, Mazri, Azera, Limineo, Beso, Sepri. And basically there's two categories and God, says it's good. In Pasuk Chavtet, in 6b, after God makes man in his image and puts him in charge, listen to what it says. I'm going to make it a lot bigger now. God says as follows. Here we go. Verse 29. Vayomer Elohim, Hinea natati lechem et ko esev zorei azara. I'm giving you all vegetables. Remember the words esev zorei azara? That's the same thing we had on day six. Maybe I should get my little, open up my tools. Here we are. Annotate. And we need now an arrow. Okay. There we go. That's what we wanted. Put this up. And we have Esa Mazri Azera. Okay, that should be obvious. And now we have to make it smaller again. Okay, and then we have I guess that's over here on the side. Okay, see how they match up? The two things that God made on 3B, the two main categories on 3B, is unique to man as opposed to animal. Why? That's exactly the same phrases that's exactly man's diet. And that's highlighting the connection between what I call 3B and 6B. I'm trying to show you how Chumash is pointing to that parallel. In contrast, what do the animals get? The animals of 6A, l'chokhayat ha'aretz, l'chokhayat ha'shamayim, everything else that man's in charge of, what do they eat? They get Yerek Esev. Et ko Yerek Esev, natatirem l'ochla. They get Yerek Esev. Now, I'm going to show you in the Parshanim, many Parshanim, say Yerek Esev is the exact same thing as Esev Zorei Azara, which is a logical assumption. But it's clear that Chumash is differentiating between animals and men. Got that? Now, and I can stop the share and clear this whole thing up here. I'll close this and close the share. Who remembers where the phrase Yerek Esev comes up again in Chumash?
With rain.
But after what rain? I mean, Yerek Esev comes up after it rains. That's for sure. That's in life. But does the phrase Yerek Esev come up again in Chumash?
Doesn't it say?
If you were in shul last week, you should have noticed. Remember after the flood in Parshat Noach? So we're going to read about it real quick. Okay. Everyone knows after the flood, God promises no more floods. And we have what we call, what we like to call the seven Noahi laws. Let me share my screen and show you. I'm going to put the regular Chumash, and we don't want that. We don't want that. We don't want that. We want share screen. Here we go. Regular Chumash. It's going to be, where's my regular Chumash? We need, where's my, oh, here we are. Okay. We don't want that. We don't want my email. We want Genesis. Here we go. In Genesis chapter
8. Yeah.
Chapter 9 here now.
Oh, it's
9. Last week we did 8 with the Reach Lechoach. What do we have now? Chapter 9. God blesses man. Just like, remember, after the flood, it would be very similar to before the flood, very similar to chapter 1. Elohim blesses man, Noach and his sons, with Purvu, just like on day 6, on 6b. And the animals be afraid of man, just like beforehand, very similar. Maybe drop down a little bit. Instead of Uruduba, instead of being in charge of them, now it's the animals will be afraid of you, but more parallel than different. But again, what's man? What, who's going to be afraid of man? All Chayat Aretz, that's 6a, and all Toshamayim, that's 5, and day 5, and all, what do you call it? All the Geayam, all the fish and the fowl. That's a clear parallel to the story of creation. Now comes the big Chiddush. Kol Remes Ashiru Chai, every moving thing, every other animal, Lechem Yela Lochla, you can eat. And what's that like? Ki Yerek Esev Natati Chemako. It's like Yerek Esev. And the phrase Yerek Esev is the giveaway. Because what was Yerek Esev in chapter 1, on day 6? That was specifically animal feed. Right? And now all of a sudden, man can eat animals. But what it's like? It's like Yerek Esev. Got that?
Hello?
Hi, chat. We just sent you a picture of my
kid. Right, let me stop the share.
Okay, I have you check.
Quick mute. Take a second. Participants.
Okay. I did.
All?
Yeah.
Okay. That should clear that up. Now, you understand what I'm trying to point out? I'm bringing this as an example. I call this a smoking gun. I don't think it could be by chance that on when God makes man on 6B, we're very specific about his diet, that he eats all the things from 3B. That is what I'll call from now on, Bari Pei Eitz and Bari Pei Adamah. And animals eat Yerek Esev. And after the flood, we have a very parallel recreation story with man in charge again, with the same blessing of Pur Vu, of be fruitful, multiplied, but added to man's diet. You know, on 6B, man gets a diet. Also, after the flood, man receives a diet. But now his diet, what we add to the diet, is not only vegetation, but also he can eat animals. But the animals that he's allowed to eat is like Yerek Esev. Now, I want to give a very technical reason, which sounds like technical, and I'll share it with you. I don't think I ever shared with this class before. You might buy, you might not, but has nothing to do with Bible yet. Has this to do with nature, with anthropology? Why are animals able to graze and humans can't? If you ever watch animals, especially sheep, they can eat grass, they can eat shrubbery. Why can't humans do that?
We don't have the teeth.
We didn't develop the teeth. Why didn't we develop the teeth?
Not the teeth, it's the stomach.
We can't stomach
four
it.
Stomachs.
Because we were created with a defect. I'm saying it in jest.
The enzymes in the
God
stomach.
Made us with only one stomach. Understand?
It's not just the stomachs. It's the enzymes in the stomachs. Okay. Our stomachs, our intestines, do not have enzymes that can break down fiber.
Okay, but again, it could be, I'm just calling that same word for stomach. I'll leave alone the biological background, but that could all be, if I go to evolution, maybe those enzymes developed with the extra stomach. You can argue with that from forever. But what I'm getting at in general is that basically, I'm just using the word defect in the fact that we can't eat grass and we can't eat shrubbery. Other animals can, and that enables them to survive. Now, in real life, what happens? We know from real life, animals eat other animals, animals eat everything that we eat pretty much. But man, who's made now B'Tselem Elohim, who's very, very creative, came up with a great idea to solve the problem of his defect. Right? He's missing the stomach or missing the enzymes, okay? We'll call it enzymes, whatever the difference is, okay? He's missing whatever he needs to process that grass. What did he do? He domesticates sheep. Yeah? And what are the sheep do?
Did he just freeze, or is
that the grazing? There's extra stomach and enzymes for protein.
Rabbi, you keep freezing.
Yeah.
You understand? Man's ingenuity.
You're freezing. You're coming in and out.
You're freezing. Maybe turn off your video. If you turn off your video, it might help the stability of the connection.
Could everybody mute, please? Let him get back on.
Am I back on now? Okay, sorry about that. It turns out I'm at my son's house, and when the microwave turns on, it interferes with the thing, so they just turn the microwave on. Okay, there's a scientific reason for everything. We're into science studying biology. If it goes down again, let me know. I have my phone next to me. I can connect there. Okay, back to my explanation. I'll review. I'm not sure if I froze. My claim is that man, using his ingenuity, which I have to call an outset of Elohim, came up with a great idea, a great chap, if you know your Yiddish. What was his idea? He said, let's use these animals for our protein. We can't graze. We can't eat the grass. Animals eat the forest. We domesticate the animals, and then still bad. Oh wait, I'm switching now. I'm switching my internet to my phone. Switching my internet to my phone. Okay, it's really strange. Switching. Give me a second. Okay, how is it now?
We can hear you now.
It's okay, good. Okay, sorry about that. I switched to my phone. Hopefully, this should be good now. Okay, if it goes down again, let me know. Now we can always blame it on the Iranians.
Ingenuity.
Okay, now back to human ingenuity. What I'm suggesting is that eating sheep or domesticating cattle and sheep is part of man's settling in the Elohim. If you study your anthropology, it turns out that many people begin the study of civilization when man domesticates sheep and cattle. Domesticating of animals together with domesticating wheat is going to be a major step in man's development and civilization. Because when he domesticates wheat, he has to settle down in one place and he builds homes. Domesticating animals, he has to have, you know, put them in one place and guard them. And instead of becoming hunters and gatherers and nomadic, man settles down, then builds villages and then cities, and then gets into trouble. Now, that's the background. Why am I making a big deal about it? Because just from a technical point, what might be the reason Kierik Esev? If I follow that explanation, when Chumash says that man now can eat animal, and those animals are like Kierik Esev, from a very technical point of view, what happened? That man can eat Kierik Esev now through the agency of the animals. Got that? Now, there might be a law later on So what animals can we eat? If you follow the kosher laws, the animals that we eat are basically animals that are herbivores. They're basically that chew their cud. Why do they chew their cud? Because they have two stomachs. Understand? In other words, the simanim of a kosher animal, the main one, chewing their cud, it directly relates to that idea of our inability. We don't chew our cud, and therefore we can't process that vegetation, where the animal does it for us. Again, I'm just giving a possible idea that maybe the simanim of our kosher animals that we do eat,
the amount of easiness,
very much that idea that relates our ingenuity to get protein from. Oh, 1 second. I'm now the host. Oh, somehow you got the host. Let me claim the host again. 1 second. Okay. Am I the host? I'm not the host. That's interesting. Cause you were, Judy, you were the first next one on the list. So Judy, if you know how to rock this, make me co-host now. Now that you're host. When I went offline,
I don't have that note anymore.
You the next person online host.
I don't have that note anymore. So maybe you're the host.
No, I'm not the host. I see on the thing. If you click on your name in participants, look in participants and click on your name. And then next to your name, you see three dots on the right. See that? That's Judy, right? Judy Lando?
Yes, but I don't know what to do.
No, no. So just go into participants. To the right
Where
of you,
is that?
There's a box.
Oh, I see. Okay.
A box with three dots. Open that box. Put your thing on the camera. So click on the camera and then you get three dots instead. Click on the three dots. See that? And then you'll get the. Then you can make someone else host. If not, it's no big deal. I'll have you, we'll try. Okay. No, it didn't work yet.
If you could just ask Warren Goldstein to mute.
Is Warren also a host? No, only Judy Landau's a host.
No, Warren Goldstein should mute because there's sound coming from his square.
Oh, okay. Yeah. We have to mute. I can't mute anybody.
Okay. He just muted. Good.
Okay. You won't be able to share either if you're not.
Okay, yeah, I won't be able to share. Judy, try one more time. Take your mouse. And move it over to the camera, to the right. And when your mouse is over the camera, you'll see three dots. That little camera sign is going to disappear, and you'll see three dots. You see that? You should unmute yourself so we can talk to you. You don't see that. I guess not.
And she's muted.
Okay. Judy, you have to unmute yourself also so we can hear you.
Sorry, I thought I did.
Yeah. Okay.
And now I don't get a list of participants.
No. Go into participants. You're in participants.
I don't have it.
No, on the bottom of your screen, you should say participant. Yeah. Okay, click
yes,
on that.
Yes, I clicked them.
Okay, now you get a list of all the people in the class?
No, it just shows a blank screen with the number that we have. Okay.
Click on the arrow.
Click on the arrow, okay.
Okay, I got it.
Okay, now go to the right to the right of your name.
Yes.
You see the little camera? It looks like a fish?
Yep.
Okay, click on that. And you get three dots.
Yes, I clicked on them.
Okay, now, then it says make someone else co-host or something. That's one of the options.
No, remove pin.
No, but you're Julia. It didn't say anything there?
Nope.
You know what I'm going to do? I have a better idea. I'm sorry for all this. I'm going to apologize, everybody. I'm going to end the meeting and reopen it, okay?
Yeah,
I'm
think that's the best
and
idea.
Reopen it, and then I'll claim host and do it the regular way. Mike, I should have had that in the first place. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, I'll leave. No, I can't end the meeting. Judy, you have to end the meeting. Oh my gosh. Try to do that. If she ends the meeting, everyone will go back on, but we'll give it one more try. Or maybe I'll just do it without the, or maybe you can share the, I can't share my screen now either, probably.
Shall I?
Yes. Oh, wait, I'll send a request. If I can send a request to share my screen, that's enough. Can you, Judy, you get my request to share screen?
Just continue. You're fine now. Just continue.
I'll just continue. Okay, fine. Oh, yeah, okay. You people have, you have screens. You have, I've shared the source sheet before. I'll just continue. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, people can share now. We're good. Now we're good. Alrighty.
Everybody else, please mute your microphones. Everybody okay. else, please mute.
Yeah, please mute. Now we're good. Alrighty. Now we need muters. Okay, that's good. Okay, so now if I go back now to day six, my apologies for the mess. Now back to what God says. God says, I'm going to give you, God give man, remember Ko'etz of Zorah Zara and Ko'etz Pri Eitz. And Chochayat Aretz get Ofa Shemaim, etc. And the animals got Yerek Esev. That was on day six. And now if I go back to today, if I go back now to the story of the flood, that's where we're up to last. Make my screen smaller now. Let's go to the story of this, of the flood. What do we get? Here we are. God blesses Noah and his sons, etc. And what does he tell him? God tells man, God blesses man, Purvu, and then Kol Remes Shuchai Lachem Yachal Kerek Esef Lachem Atakol. I'm giving you like Kerek Esef, so I gave a technical explanation. Then we have the theme. Now that you can eat animals, you were also created on day six. To eat an animal, you have to eat it alive. I mean, you have to kill it first because the other law was now that you can eat an animal, you can't eat it. You can't eat it alive. You have to kill it first. That's called Ever Min Achai. That's the logic of that next law. But animals are not allowed to eat you. I'll try to protect you from being eaten by animals. But now that you can eat animals and have to kill them first, and you're all created on the same day, and you're all part of the animal kingdom, maybe humans can eat other animals and can kill other humans. And therefore, we're told right away, Shofech dam ha'adam, someone who spills the blood of another man, right? But dam yedam shofech, does that mean, that's a great question, is that an obligation that man has to kill him? There's a lot of ways. I think Rabbi Shulman gave a share on something like that on the Parsha share 2 weeks ago. But is this a commandment to man that if someone commits murder, Shofech Dam Hadam, if the person who commits murder, then man has to put him to death? Or is this a statement that if man kills another man, God will see to it that he gets his punishment? No, that's a great question. But the main important is, the reason is, keep it tzelem elokim, because man is different than animal. And man's tzelem elokim, and the way you treat your fellow man is basically how you serve God. If man is tzelem elokim, and you have respect for God, then elokim, because man has that creative ability, and is made like God, and is put in charge of all his creation by God, man is different than animal, and that's what I want to go to now, at that point. Now, if we have time later on, I'll talk about the famous argument. Is God allowing man to eat meat a concession? Is that basically a downgrade of man? You're part of the animal kingdom and therefore you can eat meat? Or is man gone up a level? In other words, is eating meat a concession to man, but puts him back in the animal kingdom? If I remember Rav Kook correctly, but I think Rav Kook explained was that before the flood, man was put on too high a pedestal. He was like too different than animals. God expected too much from him. And not allowing man to eat meat caused him to kill other human beings and be corrupt. So God had to bring him back down to be part of the animal kingdom, right? And work his way back up slowly. But if man realizes on his own that he shouldn't eat meat, then it's okay. But you can't command man not to eat meat. If man decides on his own not to eat meat, that's fine. He calls it chazon et simchanut, like the vision of a vegetarian. But you can't command man not to eat meat because it's not natural for him. Now, this goes back to a much bigger theme of what's the difference between man and animal? And I'm going to unshare my screen for a minute and have a quick discussion. Okay, and then we'll get back to our source sheet. What I'm trying to show, and I want to suggest that might be one of the key themes of the creation story, is there must be a reason why days 3 and 6 have two acts of creation. Because it's clear that Chumash has the parallel, But for some reason, days 3 and 6 need 2 acts of creation. And Chumash utilizes that to highlight the difference between man and animal. Why? Because the jump from 3A to 3B, from land to vegetation, I call that a quantum leap. There's a clear difference between land itself and vegetation. That's going to be, I call that a quantum leap. It's obvious. I don't need to explain that. That's obvious that vegetation is a quantum leap in the whole evolution process, or life and nature, whatever that may be. If I look at the parallel on day 6, from 6A to 6B, on 6A, God makes the animal kingdom. 6B makes man. There's no obvious quantum leap from 6A to 6B. That's my key point. And what I think Chumash is coming to tell you, there is a quantum leap from 6A to 6B. In other words, it's very easy, and I can prove that from history and scientists, because most people hold that man is a super-duper ape. And maybe in a couple million years, monkeys start making airplanes or believing there's no God. That man might, even the animals might become more sophisticated. Or it could be that there's a fundamental difference between man and animal. What I think Chumash is telling us is when you look at the animal kingdom, you might notice you're part of the animal kingdom and you act like the animal kingdom, but there's a fundamental difference between you and the animal kingdom, and that's your settlement. That relates to your ability to become spiritual. It's what's called, and that's the question, is man part of the animal kingdom and no different? Read Kohelet, not Kohelet Havamina. Remember, Matar Adamina Behima Ayin Ki HaKol Hada. Is man basically has the same fate as an animal? They live, they die, they eat, they fight, they have their wars, etc. Are we basically just another part of the animal kingdom? And that's most people who follow evolution might say we're way ahead in the process, but we're basically part of the same animal kingdom. We behave like animals. We're a mammal. Or is there something fundamentally different between man and animal? What I want to claim is, I think Chumash, based on that parallel, is screaming, there's a fundamental difference between man and animal, and that's the Tzelem Elokim. Now, I'm pretty sure that's pretty much what the Rambam claims in Mor Nevuchim. In Mor Nevuchim, which is really his commentary on Chumash. If you read Rambam's introduction to Mor Nevuchim, he basically says the following. I wanted to write a commentary on Chumash, and he was about to, and then he thought, in his commentary on Chumash, he's going to spill the beans. He says, I understand things from Chumash. Chumash is a book to study, and I've reached these conclusions, but God hid them, so only people who know how to look for them can find them. So Rambam says, it's not fair. Now, I can't explain my understanding of Chumash, Rambam says, because God wanted to hide these understandings and wanted man to find them. Read his introduction one time to Mor Nevuchim. It's really interesting. He claims that he wanted to write a commentary on Chumash, like many people before him did. But he said, if I share with you my understanding of Chumash, I'm going to spill the beans. And God wanted those hidden. It fits the Rambam's whole approach of that the way you build your Olam Haba and the way you build your spirituality is through your wisdom and through your study.
Menachem, can I just
one
question? Isn't it enough for your argument that the Tzelem Elohim is mentioned only in the creation of man? None of the other animals have that descriptor. So isn't that
for sure? That's for sure. But we're highlighting that difference. I agree with you. That should be enough. I want to make it even stronger. I want to make it stronger because when you look at nature, you might reach the opposite conclusion. And what's my proof? Most people reach the opposite conclusion. Right? In science, again, we're similar, but we're more similar than different. There's a slight difference, but we're more similar than different. Chumash is screaming, there's a fundamental difference. And that Tzelem Elokim is how you build your spirituality. That's how you build your connection to God. Now, why is it important for me? Because I think that's the purpose of the creation story. Got my point? It's not how God created, not why he created or that he created. It's what's the purpose of man? Now, how does man realize that he's different, that he's connected to God through his study of nature? Got that? What's called, when he's lahavdil, and that's a big word in the creation story. Remember, vayavdil Hashem between this and that. Ever since day one, God's separating lahavdil. He's mavdil ben or lachoshech. He's mavdil ben between the mind above and the mind below. I think he's mavdil the, things up in the heaven. And therefore, when man studies nature, he realized, hey, there's a difference between vegetables and fruit. Right? They're similar. They both grow from the ground, but there's a fundamental difference between vegetables and fruit. Agreed? Now, how do we remember that? We notice that in nature, but we remember that by making those brachot. The blessings we make every day remind us that there's what Rav Sacks would call dignity of difference. If you read his book on dignity of difference, okay? But not just among men, but within nature. Now, later in Gan Eden, man is commissioned to name the animals, isn't he? He's not naming personal names, he's naming the species. Now, what enables him to name the species? His dot. His man has the mental capability of organizing and categorizing different species. Now, if man keeps on doing that, just like he can differentiate between vegetables and fruits and between different species of animals, he'll realize he's different than other animals, even though he's similar. That's categorization does. Now, the ultimate conclusion man should reach is that there's a fundamental difference between man and animal, and that begins his connection to God. It's that realization that it's by studying nature. That's the question, does nature hide God or does nature help us find God? So the ability to perceive God through nature, I call that the or. That's how I view that's the or of creation, I think. That's the light that not only did God make man with creativity, he gave man the ability to find God through the study of nature, through the perception of nature, depending on your outlook. Now, you could look at history and reach a terrible conclusion that what? How could there be a God? You know, how could it be such a mess? Or you could look at history and say, there's no logical explanation for these political upheavals if it wasn't for God behind them. Same thing with nature. Nature could hide God, or through nature you can see God. Basically, that's going to be Shem Elokim and Shem Yud Kev Havke. And both enable man to find God, and maybe they can, like, they work together. They're a team, Hashem and Elokim, because it's Hashem Hu Elokim, it's the same God.
Can I say something?
Yeah, sure, Dori.
It says not only by Avdel, but also Lemineu, which means that all from the beginning, he's giving species and he's enabling men to look at the different species from the beginning. And there is
very good, very good point.
The order of the creation is with the Avdel and species.
Yeah, very good. The Chumash makes a big deal about every species by using Lemineu. And then man's job is to identify them.
That's right.
And then, if you remember chapter 2, man is lonely because no animals, he can't relate to any animals. Remember that story? And then he has to make woman. Remember he has to do that first operation, put him to sleep. And then we have what's called zugiyot, we have companionship with men, but the companionship that man needs for himself, husband and wife, it's the same need for companionship, he needs a companionship with God. And that's why Kabbalists make a big deal about that idea, that through marriage relationship, you understand relationship with God. And if you want to explain to a young yeshiva,
you're freezing again.
Marriage is like, it says, take your understanding again. Oh, no. Okay. We're back on. Okay. Let me see what happened. No, I see what happened. Verse 22. Okay. Am I back on or not?
Yes.
There we go. Okay. Yeah. Okay. But he just went back to the other internet site. That's all. What Doree was saying was very good about by the different species. And then, so what I want to do now is I want to show you, something like this, and obviously I was going about man being able to differentiate, hopefully will lead him to find God. Now, I'll go back to my source sheet now and show you two things which are really interesting. First, the Rambam's definition, my summary of the Rambam's definition of what Tzelem Elohim is. I'll share my screen now. Now I can share it. Let's go back to here. What was man's definition? Oh, I'm sorry. Here we go, up here. Okay. His definition, he doesn't use these symbols, but that's my summary of it. The core difference between man and animal, whatever man is, so perhaps whatever animal is, and you get Tzelem Elokim. No. Maharal in Tiferet Yisrael goes into this discussion a little bit. And he talks about the difference between man and animal. He says as follows, I'll translate, umiata, now, Adam, which we call man or homo sapiens, ashru nivdal, see the word nivdal, mikol shar balei chayim. Man is different than all other living things. Mitzara nefesh. Okay, he used the word nefesh, maybe neshama. Shein afsho nefesh beimit, rak nafsho nefesh tichlit. That's very similar to the Rambam. In other words, his nefesh is not just animal instinct. There's something, he has a nefesh, but it's not the same nefesh that an animal has, because he calls that a nefesh tichlit. That has to do something with your ability to think and process thoughts and knowledge. Lo kama shar balei chayim, okay? Not like other animals in nature. He's also claiming there's a fundamental difference. And he's going to bring some examples that reflect that difference. And listen to the examples that he brings. Kimash Adam hu banai, man can be a builder. And that guy can be a carpenter. Osem lochot afia, he can bake. Okay? He can cook. Okay? And he can fix clothing and things like that. Okay? Okay? So those acts, those creative acts, require a nefesh tichlit. What's that? Now, the list Maharal brings, I think is awesome. I'm not sure if he realized what he did, but that's all the melachot of Shabbat. That was, what can't we do on Shabbat? All the things that are forbidden Shabbat. Now, we could do them, but we refrain from doing them. Because God could continue creating, but he decided he's stopping creation. He stops nature. The last thing of creation is man, who has the ability like God to be creative. And God decides, even though he could be continue creation or do another stage, he stops and puts man in charge. So we take a break every 7 days to remember that God gave us the ability and the obligation or the responsibility to use our creativity to do good. That's why Parva is so important. We have to reflect as well. And maybe that's what Shabbat is for. But what do we refrain from on Shabbat? All the things that we don't do on Shabbat all relate to how we're different than animals. So if you know the laws of Shabbat, the whole process of making clothing, which is unique to humans. Remember, only humans need clothing. And what's really cool, they use the sheep that they use for their extra stomach. Also, it's for the wool to make. That's why is the main korban, the korban tamid? What makes the sheep, besides the fact that our ancestors were shepherds, at least Yaakov for sure was. And so was Avram. But why is sheep so central? And why is the korban tamid? Our mainstay in the beginning, basically, of our civilization is domesticating animals. But the key animal that gives us clothing, food, milk and meat together are sheep, right? So cows also enable us to get the meat, but also enable us to plow the field. But they don't give us clothing. But they give us cloth to write Sifrei Torah. We can write, on their skins. The goats give us maybe a different, weatherproofing clothing. So you can make goat skin to protect you from rain. But wool from the lamb and the milk and the stomach and the cheese, everything that comes from a lamb is really key, not to mention the meat. So the whole process of making clothing is unique to humans and the need for clothing. The whole process of domesticating wheat and then hence making bread. We have that there as well. Okay. Building, cooking. What else was there? That covered most of them, right? Making light at night, making fire, using fire and things like that. That covers almost all the melachot of Shabbat. And therefore, the things that we refrain from Shabbat are things that remind us of how we're different than the animal kingdom, specifically those things. And by chance, those are all the things that we do in the Mishkan. Because what's the Mishkan? The Mishkan is a mini home. The idea is you don't go to visit God's house. You go to visit God's house to remember what your house should look like. So in our house, right, we write, right, writing down our thoughts. Animals communicate, but writing down our thoughts to pass them to the next generation. Communication through writing, that's also a Malachat Ktiva. And at the Kodesh Kodeshim, we have the written word in our contract. We show off our bread. We show off our light. We have cooked meat, remember? And then with the meat, we cook the meat. We burn the meat. We have flour with it and wine. Wine is processed. No animal takes grapes and squeezes them and makes wine. That's processed grapes that's unique to humans. oil as well. Remember? Shemen. I don't think animals come up with the idea of making cooking oil from olive oil. But they'll eat the olives, but they're not going to make oil out of it. If we make the oil, they might use it. If we cook a challah, they'll come and eat it. But no animal does what we do. And all those things that we do in the Mishkan, and hence that we don't refrain from on Shabbat, all remind us of that key theme, that we're B'Tzelem Elokim. God gave us the ability to be creative, and we have to use our creativity to do good. Now, don't tell me that's not a universal theme for humankind. To appreciate you have creativity, but you're different than an animal. Remember that, and that's responsibility. It's like a child growing up. You know, it's now that you can, now that you're a grown up, or now you're growing up, right? Now you have a license, you can drive a car, but be responsible. In the same way, man wants God to appreciate his ability to be creative and use it properly. And that's why the story of creation is highlighting you're different than an animal. You have that creative ability. But if you're like God, now when you're creative, you have the ability to reflect. But what God does is good. You strive to do good. And now I have a message, not how God created, why he created, or that he created, but rather, what is the meaning of human life? Now, and that's my understanding of Perek Aleph and Bereishit. Now, take on top of that, the idea that not only do you have to try and do good, but the God who made all the powers of nature, he's in charge of all those powers. And he's Gomel Chasarim Tovim, means if man doesn't do good with his creative ability, God can use the powers of nature to punish you. And if God does good with those, he can use the powers of nature to bless him. So once man realizes the correlation between them, or the causation between them, that might lead him to do good. Because God's goal is that man should do good. Later, God's going to create, going to choose a nation to be the model of using their creativity to do good. And that's going to be Shabbat. We'll see that in a minute. So take a look in, this is the number 7 in general. The number 7 always goes with nature, doesn't it? Besides creation and the flood story, remember there's 7 days before the 40 days and 40 nights. Why, with Yaakov and Laban, why 7 years to get a wife? Isn't wife getting marriage part of nature approval? Why work dafka 7 years? Pharaoh's dream, 7 years of famine, 7 years of plenty. Again, agriculture. It's just, everything has to do with nature is always 7. Okay? Why are all the agricultural holidays 7 days? Why is Chag HaMatzot 7 days? Not because Kriyat Yam, it might have been that the seed was split 7 days later. It doesn't say that in Chumash. And I don't need that. The law of 7 days of Chag HaMatzot is before we leave Egypt even. We get in Parshat HaChodesh. Shavuot, 7 weeks. The story of the manna, 7 days. The whole idea of Shabbat, it's got to do with food. Remember, the manna is going to be, going to train us how to deal with our agriculture when we come to Israel. That's Parshat Ekev, chapter 8, in Sefer Devarim. All the holidays.
Shmi,
all cycles of 7.
Could it be influenced by other cultures? Because 7 is a typological number in other cultures as well. And you see it in native stories and so forth.
So it could be, but I'm pretty sure we're, I think we came first, or we're a close tie. There's the Kuzari talks about it a lot. How come over the globe everyone keeps a 7 day week? Where's that coming from? There's no logical reason for that. But so did we come up with that idea and other nations copied it? That's a classic understanding of Shabbat. There's no proof of otherwise. Now it could be we stole it from somebody. Maybe someone else came with it first. I doubt it though. But because there's no logical reason for a 7 day week. Now, what's really interesting is our commandment to keep Shabbat. If we follow Chumash, I need the creation story. Then what was my whole point? God wants us to keep Shabbat to remember that we're B'Tzelem Elokim. To remember that to use our creativity properly. So what's God tell us to do? Work 6 days a week because God works 6 days a week. Remember, Kishei Shitamim, that you have to work 6 days a week because God works 6 days a week. And, but you rest on the seventh day because God rests on the seventh day. Now, if I study, what my claim is that the main thing that's happening, God wants us to keep Shabbat. To make Shabbat meaningful, he gives us the creation story. Not to tell us that he created, how he created, or why he created, but rather, what's the meaning of human creativity? And the responsibility that we're God's people, and we have to be the model of using our creativity to do good, and striving to do good, but being creative, there's a mitzvah to be creative. We're supposed to work 6 days a week. It's in the Ten Commandments. I think that's worth a creation story. And what actually happened, how God did it, Ask a scientist. Okay. That may change every couple thousand years, but that's not important. But on the other hand, what's the meaning of our creativity and that, and using our study of nature and science to recognize we're different than animal and that's a responsibility and to use that to do good. That's worth a story of creation in 6 days, no matter how God did it. So that was my point. That was the key point I tried to get across today. And then we have the post flood. Now, what's really interesting, the Mishnah Brachot, which we all know, six parakim Brachot, Kesem Brachim ala Pirot, right? Al Pirot Tuilam, we make Bari Pirot Eitz. One exception, wine, we make Bari Pirot Gafen. Now, why is that an exception? There was differentiate between Eitz, between Bari Pirot Eitz and Bari Pirot Adama. That's clearly from creation story, isn't it? That law every child knows from age two or three, right? From kindergarten, from the youngest age, every Jew knows, every observant Jew, even semi-observant Jew, knows we differentiate when we make blessings. But they don't realize it's coming from the creation story. And the reason we do it is to remember that theme of the creation story. And therefore, studying Bereshit is going to be important. Now, how is wine different? That's super processed. That's something that's unique to humans. Right? Animals can eat vegetation for sure. But making wine is unique to humans. Also, wine is a great sample of being able to do good or bad with your creativity. Read the Noach story. You know, wine can elevate you and wine can bring you down. Now, al peret haaretz, you make bread for adama, except for bread, or flour, got it? You make amotzei lechem min haaretz. Why? Because these are the epitome of man's creativity, aren't they? So that's the... The ultimate advanced creativity is using fruit to make wine and using vegetation to make bread.
Tehillim kuf dalad. Tehillim kuf dalad.
Kuf, that's Baruch Hinafshi, no?
Kuf, yeah. The greatest hits of creation.
Every verse
the greatest coded. Hits of creation. Exactly. Only wine and bread are, like, they don't sort of fit in, unless you understand this.
Yain yisamach ledad onosh, right? That's from there. That, by the way, Kuvdaz, it's an awesome parak in Tehillim. I'm sure Rabbeinu must have talked about it, but that in creation goes awesome. Now, Rabbi Yehuda has an interesting statement. Rabbi Yehuda says, Borim minei disha'im. Anyone who learned Mishnayot remembers this, right? What's Rabbi Yehuda's opinion? I think we discussed it before. I'll show you. That it's an argument how to read Chumash on day three. I'll go back up. Go back to day three. Move this to the side here. Okay. What did God say? That's why I formatted it to show Rabbi Yehuda's opinion. Okay. What's God say? Tatshe haris desh es deshe, kama, right? Esa mazriya zera, es prio sepri. And what happens? The land makes deshe. Got it? Esa mazriya zera, es prio sepri. Are these three different categories? Deshe, esa mazriya zera, and priates? Or is it two categories? Is deshe the general name for vegetation, which has two subcategories? I think that's the machloket between Rabbi Yehuda and Chachamim. Got it? And also, it'd be really complicated for brachas bees and stuff if there's three categories. But we'd like to keep halacha simple. So that was my, that's what I want to share with you today. So again, I'll just review here. We had the quantum leap from 3A to 3B, which has to be parallel to 6A to 6B. That was my whole point. Even though man is very similar to animal, it's also different than animal. And it's difficult to define that difference, but Chumash is basically saying, according to the Rambam, the difference is your Tzelem Elokim, and you have to use that creativity. Because, and then I brought the Maharal and all the Melachot of Shabbat, which are parallel to that, and the Melachot we do in the Mishnah, et cetera, which relates to the Mikdash. And then we had the recreation story after the flood, and I gave a technical reason why man can eat meat. And why that's called Kiara Kesev. And then I wanted to add to it that might come to explain the laws of Kashrut. As God's people, we have to differentiate between animals that chew their cud and don't chew their cud. And only the ones that chew their cud, because that they're doing that for us. They're chewing. We can't chew our cud and they're doing it for us. So it makes sense God allowed us to eat animals to chew their cud, which explains why it's called Kiara Kesev. But because eating an animal might lead you to think you're part of the animal kingdom. In other words, eating an animal and killing animals to eat them might make you feel I'm part of the animal kingdom and bring you down, make you a glutton, etc. Or eating an animal can remind you you're different than an animal. especially eating the domesticated animals. And therefore, what law do we have? If you're going to eat an animal, it should be an offering. It should be a korban. That's safer by Yikra. But if you're too far away from the Mikdash and Bamot aren't mutter, once you can only bring korban in Yerushalayim, then it's too far to go to Yerushalayim, but you have to eat meat. Therefore, I treat it like a korban shlamim, where if it was a korban, I would drain the blood and offer the chelev, the fat around the around the abdomen, the blubber fat, and therefore the chelev and the dam are forbidden to be eaten, and I have to do shechita like a korban, and that becomes kosher meat. So by doing a special ritual before eating meat, it'll remind me I'm different than an animal, and that's my tzad melukim as opposed to that I'm similar to an animal. In other words, to make sure eating meat, doesn't bring you down but elevates you, I think we have the laws of kashrut, especially as God's people. I mean, that's an idea. I'm not sure if I'm right, but I want to share those ideas with you today. And go ahead. Marty, go ahead. Time out. The shear's over. I'll stay now for questions, but we didn't leave yet. I'm sorry. I apologize for all the mess up. I have to remember how just to stay home next time and work from home instead of every time I travel, I mess this up. But sorry about that. Okay, go ahead.
Rabbi, you can even take it to father or a single but Shabbat and creation. So what are the two foods that you need for Shabbat?
For Shabbat. Okay, yeah, I meant to mention that. What do we do Friday night? We light candles, right? Which is uniquely human. We make a special blessing on wine. We make a special blessing on bread. And if you're not a vegetarian, we have cooked meat. Or something that tastes like cooked meat. tofu or something like that, or ki'ilu. Right? And the havdil, when Shabbos is over, we use fire, which enables us to do metalwork. Remember?
Havdil again. You have again the havdil.
The havdil. Ben or lechoshe, ben yisrael amin, ben yomashe. Got it? It's right. It's all there, I think. So I'm trying to give a little extra meaning to Shabbat and the mitzvot that we have, and every day making brachot. Even if I'm wrong, if it's just a drash, at least it's something to think about. And that was the title for this year, some food for thought. Hope you understand the title now. In other words, there's a clear, if I want to summarize, I try to prove, if I study creation story, I'm showing the parallels from 3a, 3b to 6a and 6b. This beautiful use of the word Yerek Esev, reading after the flood story. You can't miss that the flood story is a recreation story, this parallel. Many articles have been written on that. And then in light of that, I can appreciate why we differentiate between Bar Peretz and Bar Peadama, why we have a special blessing for bread, Mosef Min Aretz, and for wine, and the customs we have on Shabbat, when we bring Shabbat in, by, again, lighting candles, wine, and bread, and a special brachot on them, and Lahavdil, and Abdallah, and also all the things that are forbidden on Shabbat, all the brachot of Shabbat, all relate to things which are but clearly highlight the difference between man and animal. We refrain from things that only humans do, as opposed to animals don't do. But that whole process. And that gives meaning to how we keep Shabbat. Now, if we keep Shabbat in order to work 6 days and use our creativity properly, that was, I need 1 day a week to reflect on the week that I've done and the week coming up. So the goal of Shabbat is to remember that God created, but why he made man and what to do with your creativity. Not just to say thank you for my creativity, to see that as an obligation and responsibility and try my best to do good. Now, we argue like crazy, what's good? Whoa, do we argue what's good? That's a healthy argument. And through our study, we'll try to refine that. But at least trying to do good and wanting to be creative and using your creativity and being thankful and not just saying thank you, but acting thank you, I think that's a key thing through from creation. Okay, we're not going to spend so much time in every parak like we did today, but I want to use this as a background to understand somehow we'll take this theme and explain how and why God's choosing a nation to serve him, which would be the main theme of Sefer Bereshit.
Thank you so much.
Check the chat real fast. I'm listening. I'm just checking the chat.
Thank you so much. Okay,
the words are, a second. Rav Kook is about being a vegetarian. Yeah, that's Rav Kook's idea about being a vegetarian. Okay, very good. And the other things were about the thing. And again, my apologies about the internet. Okay, everyone have a good week, and hopefully maybe things will quiet down
this
week.
What about, yeah. You know, like, we know that It reminds me of my grandmother, you know, like during the Turkish time, they cooked esev, you know, in Jerusalem because they couldn't eat it. So maybe that you didn't have to wait for the flood, but to see the difference, and not to eat animals, but the difference between man and animal is the ability to start fire. And then we could cook. So we could even cook the esev or the deshe.
Oh, could be, yeah. Yeah, but usually, I think man came first with fire to make, probably to make tools or a big sword so we can kill other humans. And shofech dam ha'adam. Depends if you look, you know, positive or negative, or to do shechita.
That's right. That's very optimistic. Yeah,
Asher?
Have you seen Rabbi Sachs's book, The Great Challenge?
I may have seen it. I didn't read it.
Oh. Well, I would highly suggest that you read it. There are things there that I think he would. Alav Hashalom, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. But some of the things you said today, I think he would fundamentally disagree with. And I think that the Rambam also fundamentally would disagree. I mean, you quoted the Mor Nevuchim, which is, of course, written in Arabic and therefore subject to translation. But the Yad HaChazakah is not subject to translation. It was written in Hebrew, and he was exceedingly careful about how he wrote it. And I think that the second parak, the first two halachas in the second parak, disagree, if I understood what you said about your outlook vis-a-vis nature. I think the Rambam there disagrees with what you said. I think
this is what the nature hides God. I'm saying nature can hide God and nature can bring you closer to God depending how you look at it.
I don't think that that's not what he's saying there.
Okay.
He's talking about some. I mean, it's true that nature, that it, because of human psychology, that can be the case. But I don't think that's what the Rambam is saying. I think if you read it carefully, and remember, he was very careful about how he ordered things. You can't take a halacha from the Rambam and pull it out of context. You have to.
I'm not claiming I'm explaining the Rambam. I've just brought the Rambam's introduction to the first chapter of Mor Nevuchim, where he makes that distinction between what Tzelem Elokim is.
Oh, fine. I don't understand it. I tried to understand his first parak talks about the difference between Tzelem and Demut. I don't understand it.
Especially my biggest problem with that parak in the Rambam with Demut is the beginning of chapter 5. I don't know how he deals with the first line in chapter 5. I'll share my screen real fast. Because he says, man, there's Demut is only by humans, but not by God, right? So if you open up, wait a second, not that one. I wanted, where's a regular?
When you quote the Ani Ma'amin, that's a piyud written on by somebody.
I know. Ask Mark Shapiro about that.
It's problematic, I think.
Yeah. But where are we here? I want to find.
I don't understand that. I've tried to read. I used only Rav Kapach's translation. Which, because of the traditions of the Taimanim, vis-a-vis the Rambam, and because Rav Kapach grew up both in that tradition and as an Arabic was his mother tongue.
Yeah, his translation for him. I'm not claiming. I told you that sigma man, my sigma animal. That's my understanding of the Rambam. I'm not saying the Rambam didn't say that. I was just saying that's my understanding of the Rambam.
That is from the first parak or from his introduction?
No, from the first topic, book one, chapter one, he defines Tzelem Elokim.
Tzelem and Demut.
He distinguishes between
those two words.
But he talks about the difference between man and animal there. The man that's uniquely man's is Sechel, the Sechel Po'el. That's my understanding of the Rambam, but... If I didn't understand the Rambam right, that doesn't take away from my shir. My point about man being different than animal, whether the Rambam says it or not, still I think a strong point.
Oh, the Rambam clearly thinks that man is different from animal.
The question is, he doesn't He doesn't base it on the story of creation, though. He bases it on, you know, I think based on his logic. I'm trying to claim it comes, you know, the Rambam doesn't build it based on a close reading of Perek Aleph and Chumash, even though I think he did. That's all. You know, it's the fact that it's the first topic in his book, I think it relates to Perek Aleph and Bereishit. That was my main point. The fact that the Rambam dedicates his first chapter to defining Tzelem Elokim, it shows you that Moreh Nevuchim is a commentary on Chumash. That was my main point. But it could be, if I misunderstood the Rambam, I'm not claiming I'm explaining the Rambam. I'm giving my explanation for it, and I'm hoping the Rambam might agree based on his thing. But what bothers me with the Rambam, I can't figure out where I'm going to find the pasuk. One second. Why can't I share my screen? Share my screen with, where's my internet? Oh, here, maybe this way. You don't see my screen now, do you?
No.
No, one second. I'll try again.
No, Zoom. I think that you lost and you lose the ability. Are you the host?
Oh, maybe I can't do it because I'm not the host. I can think. Give me one more try.
You can share the screen. You're not the host.
Oh, here we go. Here's all I need. It's this one. Here. Got Genesis 9. Okay. Look in Genesis 5. I have to ask one of my friends who's an expert in the Rambam. I'm not a big expert on it, but there's how he deals with Seisef Tovot Adam Yom Bara Elohim. It says Bidmut Elohim Asah Oto. See chapter 5. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he says Bidmut Elohim, and in the first part of Moreh Nevuchim he says there's no Dmut. He has a demand of Tzelem and not that he differs between Tzelem and Dmut. And this sounds like Tzelem and Dmut are synonyms. Anyway, that's what I'm stuck on. But if anyone finds an answer, be happy to share it with me or with the group.
I don't think that he says there's no such thing as Dmut. But I don't claim to understand that first
thing. Okay.
I've so tried then I agree to read that. It a number of times. I'm getting closer, but it's but I'm a long way.
Then I agree with you. That's why that's why I brought the Maharal as a stronger proof of how man's different than animal that relates to Shabbat. Okay. Anyway, everybody have a good evening. And
thank you very much.
Next week we'll go into finish up Parshat Bereishit. We'll get through Perek Daled and Hey. Okay. Have a good week.